Thank you for downloading the Elohim Christian Church podcast. This morning's message is brought by Joshua Stock.
So, Josh is bringing out message today and is going to be speaking about his champion. And over to you.
So, how are we all doing then? Okay. All good? So the last few weeks, Pastor Shane said, we're looking at champions. We've had great messages from Faye, Charlene, Steve, about Queen Mary, Esther, and King David, looking just how they were champions, how they did so much in kind of really difficult conditions and situations. And, you know, they did so, you know, as I said, they did what God had called in life. So as we listened to three messages, there was something that struck me about each of those three champions. And as they had a call in their life from God, a plan that he'd set before them. They had a choice. They could have either followed it or gone completely off in some other direction. They chose to follow it. They acted on that plan and did something amazing. So, you know, Esther saved the whole of the Jewish people because they were going to be, you know, wiped out. You know, Mary, she brought Jesus to earth. Without him, what situation would we be in now? You know, and, you know, David, he ruled and protected the Israelite people so well during his reign through so many different trials and, you know, stuff that kicked off. But they all heard that plan, they followed it. So for us, we've all got a plan in life, haven't we? Yeah. Each and every one of us, God has got a plan in life. We also have a choice whether we follow or not. So what is there to stop us from being champions ourselves? What is there to stop you from hearing that plan and going forward and acting on it? There's nothing to stop you. So to get you all involved, just tell the people around you that they could be a champion. Let them know they could be a champion. There we go. So. Likewise, yes. So now we'll finish that kind of little pep talk. We'll move on to kind of the main part of the message. I thought it'd be nice to start off with that. So, this morning we've been looking at another champion from the Bible. When Pastor Shane first came up to me to say, I want you to talk about champion, I thought, you know what, I'm going to go some really obscure, people might not have heard of them, you know, a bit kind of different. So this morning I'm talking about the Apostle Paul. So we're looking at the difference that he made as a person, but also the people around him and how they helped him to become that champion. So a kind of a quick overview as to who this Paul guy is, and a quick kind of disclaimer at the beginning. Could get a little bit confusing. He has two names at different points through the Bible. Yeah. He starts off being called Saul, and kind of a bit further through, when he kind of has a change of heart, he becomes Paul. So the two names will be used, that it's the same person, trying to get confused like I did trying to write the stuff. I did get myself mixed up, and I should know better. So Paul starts off as a Pharisee. So the Pharisees, they're the guys who eventually got Jesus killed. You know, they were the one who were driving for him to be put on the cross. He was causing them trouble. So the Pharisees, they're the bad guys in the story, in anybody's view. And when the early church started, the Pharisees were really persecuting the early church, imprisoning them, often killing Christians at the early church. And Paul was right at the forefront of this. In fact, the first reference there is to Paul in the Bible, he's holding the coats of the men who were stoning Stephen to death. So he saw the stoning and thought that it was quite good. It just kind of shows you the kind of man he was. And actually, when next time you meet him, he's on his way to a city called Damascus with letters giving him permission with the church there to persecute, to imprison, to kill any Christians that were there. So he was on his way from doing some dark acts to going and doing some more in another city. So he was taking the persecution out of just in Jerusalem and to Damascus nearby. Jesus intervenes, there's a big flash of light, he goes blind. Jesus says to him, look, what are you playing at? Get your act together. I've got bigger plans for you than this. But you're actually going to help people rather than kill them. So he has a real kind of change of heart, goes to Damascus, meets the believers there, learns a bit more about this Jesus fellow, then ends up heading back to Jerusalem to kind of join up with the church and try and get involved there. But his achievements, once he became a Christian, are just huge. I mean, this guy, he went on three journeys throughout kind of the Middle East and Roman Empire, starting up churches, strengthening churches, you know, teaching people. He set, you know, Timothy and Titus, two, you know, big church leaders in the south, and he's the one who set them off on their path. He had a huge impact on the early church, and I'm sure a lot of the expansion would have been down to the influence he had. He also wrote, if you look in the New Testament, he wrote almost half of it. There are several books in there that are letters that he wrote to the church, so kind of Romans 1 and 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 and 2 Thessalonians, 1 and 2 Timothy and Titus. So he was quite busy. He had a lot on his plate. He got through it pretty well, and he did quite a good job on the end of it. Yeah. But especially from his beginning, from where he started, yeah, he did some quite amazing stuff. Yeah. And on the face of it, he seems like quite an independent man. You know, just me and God, against the world. Off we go. What can we? You know, how would he have needed help? But actually, if you read through his story, almost the whole time he's got people around him, a real strong network of people that are helping him to achieve everything that he did. And we're going to look at a couple of those. The first one is kind of the obvious choice. I think if I asked you about someone who helped out Paul, this would be the first man you'd choose. And it's a guy called Joseph. And this guy, he's only called Joseph once in the Bible, because when you hear him, we're going to look quickly in Acts 4:36. This guy caught the attention of the apostles. So, you know, he was quite an influential member within the church. And people were flicking there. So in Acts 4:36, it says, Joseph, a Levite from Cyprus, whom the apostles called Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. Now, Joseph is a lovely name. I'm sure our own Joseph would agree. But the disciples saw the impact that he'd had on the church, saw the kind of role that he'd had within the early church, and changed his name to kind of fit that. So every time people were talking about Barnabas, they were calling him the son of encouragement, which is encouraging in itself. But also, if people keep on telling you that you are encouraging, you're going to feel like encouraging people, aren't you? Kind of, yeah, brings out your nature. Yeah. This guy had such an impact that they changed his name to kind of show that. Yeah, and that also shows the role that he had for Paul in Paul's journey. And actually, as I said earlier, when Paul first went to Jerusalem, there was a lot of opposition to him. They didn't really trust him. So if we're going to jump over to Acts 26 to 28. So you kind of go into context of Paul has persecuted the church for a while. You know, he was the Christians in Jerusalem would know him well. He would be a well-known figure in the people who were persecuting the church. There would have been no trust in him whatsoever. He suddenly comes back from Damascus, says, hello, I'm a Christian, I believe now. Well, let me invite into the church, and they're going to be very kind of, it's a trick. They would smell a rat a mile off. But actually, when he got there, you see what happened. So, when he came to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him, not believing that he really was a disciple. But Barnabas took him and brought him to the apostles. He told them how Saul on his journey had seen the Lord, and the Lord had spoken to him, and how in Damascus he had preached fearlessly in the name of Jesus. So Paul stayed with them and moved freely in Jerusalem, speaking boldly in the name of the Lord. So Barnabas steps into a situation that Paul would have found very difficult. He's trying to join his new kind of brothers and sisters in faith. They don't really want to know, but Barnabas steps out and goes, you know what, this guy's the real deal. It's not some act. This guy is one of us now. Brings him into the fold. And you know, the influence that Barnabas would have had within the early church, he must have been a prominent member from the way he's spoken about. That's quite a confidence booster for Paul, somebody that kind of, you know, important, bring him in. Also, the last line in that, that he went speaking boldly in the name of the Lord. I mean, if somebody had done that for me, in the same way that Barnabas did, I'd be pretty bold. You know, that, how encouraging would that have been for Barnabas, for Paul, sorry, to have somebody stepping in like that, like Barnabas, putting his neck on the line. You know, if Barnabas had got it wrong, if Paul, it was a trap from Paul, you know, that would have been all over, on his head be it, in a big way, very literally. It wouldn't have gone well for them. But, you know, Barnabas put his neck on the line, and it made a huge difference to Paul. Because Paul, you know, from that he spoke boldly, he went out and, you know, he was speaking to amongst the Jewish people to such an extent that the Pharisees got wind of what Paul was doing and chased him out of Jerusalem, where he headed off to Tarsus, back to his hometown. And it's 10 years after that before you hear any mention of Paul again. And any guesses who it is who turns up and finds him? It was Barnabas. Yeah, Barnabas goes and finds him. So we're going to pop against Acts 25 to 26. Yes, and this is where kind of Barnabas goes back to find Paul, and as we go, so Then Barnabas went to Tarsus to look for Saul, and when he found him, he brought him to Antioch. So for a whole year, Barnabas and Saul met with the church and taught great numbers of people. So we've got Paul at home, no idea what role he had at the church in Tarsus, whether he was speaking at all or whether he was just kind of sitting down, being part of the church, I don't know. But Barnabas goes to seek him out, and it's not a short journey from Antioch to Tarsus. It's 86.1 miles, if you want to be precise, I'd look at this. And yeah, that was before cars, helicopters, however else you want to go. At most, he had a good, reasonably healthy donkey with him. Whether he would have done it, I don't know. But it wouldn't have been an easy journey. But he made that journey to go and find Paul, met with him, said, I need your help, come back to Antioch with me. And he's had the journey all the way back to Antioch, where they spend another year teaching together at the church in Antioch. You know, I guess Paul would have been learning from Barnabas about speaking. You can't, you know, how much speaking Saul would have done at Tarsus, I don't know, but I can't imagine he had as much experience as Barnabas would have done. And, you know, in that you see Barnabas using the influence that he had. So Barnabas was clearly an important member of the church in Antioch. He used the influence and leverage that he had there to bring Saul, right, or Paul rather, right into the forefront of the church, to bring him speaking, to bring him teaching. And actually, you know, we don't all have that same leverage, do we? You know, I definitely haven't, I'll say that, I'll put my hands up and say that now. But we can still use the leverage that we have to encourage those around us. You know, Barnabas was a clearly important man, but he used what he had for Paul. And that's the same thing we've got to do. We've got to use what we have to encourage and benefit the people around us. And, you know, for anyone who considers themselves to be a youngster, maybe, you know, in age or even in terms of being newer to the church, you're not exempt from this. You still have leverage of yourself. You know, it's easy to say to look at somebody who's kind of higher in authority, maybe kind of more holy. I'm not quite sure how to explain it. But yeah, you're going to see people and you think, oh, they're just so godly. And you think, how could I ever help them? But actually, do you know who the most encouraging people are? It's the kids. They're doing the kids' work. If you do a good kids' session, you leave with a skip in your step because they'll tell you how good it was. There is a converse day with the kids. For example, a couple of months ago, me and Pastor Shane spent a couple of days painting just for kids' room. Nice and bright, lovely coloured. Next Sunday morning, walked in feeling quite pleased with myself. I said, oh, yeah, guys, what do you reckon? And I think the third comment we got was one of the kids looked up and went, Josh, why didn't you paint the ceiling? But, you know, if they find a teaching boring, they find a craft boring, they'll tell you. It's, you know, they don't have the filter, whereas we do. We're adults, we've learned to filter. Some things aren't nice to say, some things are. But we do have to take a leaf out of the kids' books. You know, if you see something that's good, let the person know, because they're going to do it again afterwards. You know, yeah. If a preach was particularly good, if someone just gets it right in prayer, or even if in just in talking they say the right thing, at just the right time, you know that God's had some influence in there. Tell them, because they're going to do it again. Yeah. Encourage them, let them know that they're getting it right. Because, yeah, you know, positive reinforcement, it works. Yeah. It's a good system. So, you know, after a few years of Paul and Barnabas travelling together, they eventually kind of split ways. If you want to read up a bit more about it, it's in Acts 13, 36 to 41. But I'm just going to kind of skim over it quickly. They part ways, but even then, Barnabas' role doesn't change. So Paul leaves his companions to go off on another journey, whereas Barnabas heads off with a younger believer by the name of John Mark. You get the impression from the scripture he's quite naive, quite young, and was more in need of the encouragement that Barnabas was kind of, I guess, designed to give in kind of God's plan. So he heads off and he continues to be that encouraging, kind of supporting role to John Mark and his travels. So another man who joins Paul on their travels, this is still while Barnabas was with them, but another man joined them on their travels, and this guy was called Luke. And he's kind of the polar opposite to what Barnabas was. So you had Barnabas, who was a Jewish convert, starts off as a Jewish man and kind of went through the motions of becoming Christian when Jesus kind of changed how things worked. Whereas you have Luke, who was a Gentile, who was a Greek, who kind of joined the faith later on. You got Barnabas, a big confident speaker, quite a bold character. Whereas Luke is quite a quieter, more kind of servant-hearted person. I mean, you hear no mention in the Bible of Luke ever speaking out in public. But you hear so many mentions of him helping the people around him. But we don't hear a lot from Luke, actually. You don't hear much about him. What we do know is he's quite well educated. You know, I don't speak Greek myself. I'm just going to put my hands up there. But I've had a look into this. And some Greek speakers are saying that the best written book books in the New Testament, which one's written in Greek, by distance were the two books that Luke wrote. He wrote Acts and the Gospel of Luke. And those two books, apparently, are the best written, I don't know if it's the best grammar, I don't know, but the best written books in the New Testament. And actually, in those two books alone, there are more words and more verses in all of the books that Paul wrote. There's a lot of content. I love the two books, they're brilliant. So, you know, we know he's quite well educated. And if you look in Colossians 4:11, you kind of see why. So, Colossians 4:11, Paul writes, "Our dear friend Luke, the doctor, and Demas send greetings." Now, while at first, I had kind of fingers crossed that was proof that the Time Lords is real, I couldn't realise that I was just wishful thinking. And actually, when he says the doctor, he's talking about Luke's occupation. And in another translation, it describes him as his beloved physician, which is quite a nice phrase. So, you know, Luke was a doctor, he was a man of the medical profession, which would explain why he was well-educated. He got to be a doctor, it kind of comes with the territory. And you can also see, if we look in 2 Corinthians 11:24-25, why Paul would have needed a doctor with him, because his injury list was quite extensive. So he went through quite a lot. So 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten by rods. Once I was pelted with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. And I spent a night and a day in open sea. Now, that's enough of a list for me to go, I think I might just quit now. I think that's enough. I've taken enough here. But, you know, in those situations, how glad would Paul have been to have Luke there? To have somebody of a medical profession to be, you know, sort out his wounds, look after him, get him back on his feet and off again. And I can't remember the scripture, there's something in the Bible that talks about his constant fall in his side, which some people reckon is a kind of a long-term ailment that Paul would have had, that needed constant treatment, which is why Luke was so vital to him. But in those journeys, God knew exactly the punishment Paul was going to receive. He knew he was going to get beatings. He knew he was going to get all this stuff. So in part of the plan that he designed Luke for that role to help Paul out in those journeys. He was put in that position. He was put in Paul's group of companions to fill that role. And yet in the same way, God has a plan for you within this church to help those people around you. You know, each of us has different skills, different kind of, you know, interlocking network of skills that are there to benefit each other. But that's not kind of devaluing your role, though. Because if you think about it, Luke had his own distinct destiny, didn't he? He wrote 2 books in the Bible. He had his own kind of role to fulfil. Whereas we each have our own kind of destiny, but we also help the others around us. That's part of the plan that God has for us. And if you want to see any more proof of how much Luke mattered to Paul, then we're going to have a quick look in 2 Timothy 4:9-11, which is where Paul is awaiting his execution, he's in prison, and it's kind of looking pretty bad for him. It seems like at the bottom of the barrel, everything seems to be lost in a sense. And he's just spoken about his death. And he says, "For I'm already being poured out like a drink offering, and the time for my departure is near." So you can say, Paul, it sounds quite morbid, doesn't it? But I quite like his position of, "I'm already being poured out like a drink offering," saying, "You know, I know it's the end of my time. I've given everything that God has put into me to give out. It's kind of saying, you know, I've fulfilled my plan." That's kind of the sign of a champion. When you get to the end of life, and actually you can say with all honesty, "I've achieved what God has asked me to achieve," which I think is quite a nice statement. Yeah, as we see in 2 Timothy 4:9-11, speaking to Timothy, he says, "Do your best to come to me quickly, for Demas, because he loved the world, has deserted me and gone to Thessalonica. Crescens has gone to Galatia and Titus to Dalmatia. Only Luke is with me." So the one man standing at the end, the one man who stuck with Paul throughout, was Luke. As you hear, you, Demas, it seems like after the buzz around Paul went, abandoned the faith, jumped ship, off he went. You know, Crescens and Titus, it may have been God's instruction to send them to the other churches. We don't know, but all we can really confirm is that Luke stuck with him through thick and thin. Mm-hmm. He was the man who was there at the end. And, you know, who wouldn't want a friend like that? Who wouldn't want to be that friend to somebody? Yeah. That's, you know, it's just brilliant to be able to have that impact on somebody, that you can be the one to stand with them through thick and thin. Is kind of resolute in those situations. Would have been such a kind of support and a rock to Paul in those last few days. Yeah. And if you look through Paul's letters, you see in those different messages just how crucial Luke was to him. But if you look at Luke's writing himself, and in particular look through Acts, where he would have been present for a lot of the time, he never mentions himself once. Mm. he would have been, you know, crucial to that group as the group doctor, as, you know, a real kind of servant-hearted person. And during his travels, he would have been writing the books on the side as kind of a side project, which I think is just amazing that he could do that. But he never once saw any recognition for what he did. He's kind of the epitome of a man with real kind of servant's heart. He just wants to help, do what God's asked him to do, and avoid that recognition, keep quiet. But he's just a brilliant kind of person to have. And, you know, as you look through, you can see how important those two men were to Paul. You know, they were so important to him becoming that champion. He had that plan, he had that destiny that God had given to him. Without those two people, how much more difficult would it have been for him to achieve that? Without the assistance from Luke in terms of the medical stuff, those injuries, they would have set him back, if not killed him earlier on. But God planned Paul to be in those situations, planned Luke to be in those situations to allow Paul to continue on his road. If Barnabas hadn't been there at the start and hadn't put his neck on the line to bring Paul into the church, how long would that have delayed Paul in starting out on his journeys? How long would that have delayed him from being accepted into the church and having the impact he had? And now, I accept that we're not all called to be kind of servant-hearted in the same way that Luke was, or to be kind of that encouraging like Barnabas was. And we all have kind of different giftings, don't we? And, for those guys, their primary gifting would have been the encouragement, would have been the servant-hearted. And we all have different kind of primary giftings. But we all have something in us that allows us to encourage and help those around us. And we're all positioned here in this church, those people around us, to encourage and to help one another, to help build each other up. Yeah, that's why we come here on a Sunday. That's what church was designed to be. That's how God planned it out. Yeah. And if your response is kind of, well, what do I get out of helping others? Then just have a quick look in Luke 6:38. And everyone knows this scripture. It's quite a common thing to say. And it's quite often used in reference to money and material objects. And it says, give and it will be given to you. And so it's quite often used in reference to kind of money. But actually it applies in this context as well. Because you can give encouragement, can't you? You can give help to people. If you give, you're going to get it back. If you encourage people, people are going to encourage you. If you help people, they're going to be far more willing to help you when you need a hand. And it reminds me of kind of looking at films, especially action films, where it comes to kind of a pinch point where it all seems to be going wrong. And usually one of the older guys, maybe a gruff, ex-military style kind of figure, will go, I've got a couple of favours to call in. And suddenly they saved and all this. How do you think he earned those favours in the first place? Like he would have helped the other people out in the first place. He would have earned those favours. I'm not saying you need to keep a kind of a chart. Well, I helped him once, twice, so he owes me two helps. It's not quite like that. It's not quite, not quite regimental. Like, don't go home, make some charts. But help one another out. Work together. As they say in the early church, they devoted themselves to worship and to one another. Yeah. They were always helping. They were always kind of assisting one another in whatever they're coming up against. And another kind of look at that, we're looking at James 2:14-15. I'm looking at, if you don't help out, if you don't listen to God's call in helping you, what is your faith lacking in your faith in God's plan? Are you thinking that God's plan isn't going to work in this place? Or are you doubting the people who you're trying to help are capable of carrying out that plan? Because in James 2:14-15 it says, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if somebody claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but there's nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it's not accompanied by action, is dead. So often I've heard this in kind of almost a telling off kind of style. Looking at James, kind of a wake up, Josh, where you're playing at, kind of reading through. But when I was reading through this, I just felt it really encouraging. Mm-hmm. Actually, we can all have faith. We can all believe there is one God. We can all believe that's the case. But by helping people out, by acting in that faith, we give it life. We bring it, when you give action to something, you give it life. It moves. It's alive. It's kind of it's growing. And one of the signs of life is growth. And I love that kind of the concept it is of as you live, as you work, as you go through your life, you will grow. And that faith grows if you keep working in it. If you work in that faith, it will grow. And God wants to see us doing that. He wants to see us helping one another, helping us to grow as a church. Because he can do so much more with a group of people that are sort of tight-knit, strengthening one another, than they can with kind of a fractured mob of people who are trying to go on their own and trying to achieve stuff on their own. And if you get the impression I'm trying to have a moan, I'm really not. I say, this group of people in here, I can look across this room, and everyone here I've spoken to, I've found encouraging. Yeah, it's a lovely church here, it's a lovely group of people. I'm glad I'm here with you all, and you are encouraging. Yeah, that's just what came to me, so yeah, there we go. And I hope I'm encouraging to you as well, but we'll just keep quiet if not. And just, I want to leave you all with kind of this story that I found really inspiring. And it's about, have you heard the TED Talks?
Yeah.
Heard of these? They're kind of these really intellectual people will give kind of 15-minute speeches about an area of their expertise, and they're really interesting, so they talk about. And this man was on there, and this guy's called Tony Robbins, and he's a motivational speaker, a businessman, humanitarian, and recently became a Christian. And his story is just unbelievable what he's achieved from where he was. When he was 17, he is from America, he was sat at home with his family on Thanksgiving. They had no food at home at all for the Thanksgiving meal. His mum kicked his dad out because he hadn't provided the food. So he was kicked out and left and went to a pub or something somewhere, I don't know. About a half hour later, a man knocked at the door with a parcel of food and said, "You know, here you go. I heard you didn't have anything to eat. Here's the food." So he took the food in, and they had their meal on Thanksgiving. And Tony decided that in the next year he was going to feed two families for their Thanksgiving meal. The year after, he decided he was going to do four, then eight. The year after that, he got all his friends together and they fed about 25 families on Thanksgiving. He's since set up several companies. Yeah, he's become a motivational speaker, speaks all around the world. He's worked with the likes of Nelson Mandela, Mother Teresa and Barack Obama, giving them motivational talks, which I think is just insane in itself. But last year, with this foundation he set of all the companies and stuff, he fed 3 million families at Thanksgiving and Christmas. Next year he's hoping for it to be about 3.5 million, and he has a target within 25 years of feeding 100 million families across that time. But that all started from one man who came to their door on Thanksgiving with one parcel of food. He said that inspired him so much, that one kind of act of kindness, that one act of "I'm going to give some of myself to help the others," made that much difference in his life, and the difference he's made in the people's lives since then is huge. So you have no idea what your help's going to do to the people around you. That word of encouragement could set something off. That little hand could allow them to do something just unbelievable, just like this. So I just want to leave you with that. If we're working together, if we're encouraging and helping one another, what can we achieve as a group? We can all be champions. Look around at the people around you that you said could be a champion at the beginning. What are you going to do to help them to become those champions? What can you do? Because there's so many people around. If we all help one another, each and every one of us can go towards that situation of being a champion. What can be achieved at the end of that? So I'll leave you with that. So there you go.